Well, good morning.
Good morning.
I like this family camp quite a bit. I look out and I see a lot of familiar faces. I think I am familiar with about 90% of the faces here. And that's just a good feeling to know you guys. And it's a good showing this year, and it's just exciting. I'm glad to be a part of it. Couple things about me. If anybody knows what this place is on the back of my jacket, I don't frequent high-end resorts. But I do feed seven mouths, so I do frequent low-cost clothing stores. So if you can get a Patagonian vest for $6, I'll support your business. I've never been to Big Sky. I tried once to get to Big Sky when I lived in Bozeman. I went up to the four-way stop there, and coming from growing up in eastern Montana, I got to the stoplight, and I saw a couple buildings. I'm like, well, what's this all about? And I turned around and went back to Bozeman because I didn't know you had to turn and go up the canyon. So I've never been to Big Sky. I don't know what the hype is all about. I don't really care to go. But a little bit of, I guess, disclosure before I start preaching is that the way I preach, you get what's on my heart. I talk to you about what I've worked through or what I'm currently working on. So as I talk this morning, I'm not preaching directly at anyone. This is something I've had to work on or I'm still working on intense. But like when I ride my horse, sometimes he's not heading the direction he exactly should because he's a little distracted. I give him not a harsh spur, but I give him a little bit of spur in the right direction to line him out. So if the spur hits you today, it's not directed directly for you because I don't know most of you that well. But it's just directed to make a change. Because isn't that what this book is supposed to do? It's supposed to make a change in our life. And if we're growing stagnant in any area, that's dangerous. Because I think it's been said that casualness leads to casualties. And on the subject I'm talking this morning, the casualties can be those closest to us. And I've seen it way too often, and it hits home pretty hard. Because I grew up in the church. I went to school with 23 kids in my classroom. Does anyone want to take a guess how many of those are still in the church today? Three. Anybody want to take a guess how many parents of those kids are still in the church today? We could maybe up that by one or two. You see something there? So as I said, coming here is a good feeling for me. It's kind of like coming home. Because a lot of you might know my face, but you probably don't know my background a whole lot. I grew up around here. You go about as far as you got to get out here, maybe a little bit farther, the other direction of Glendive. And that's where I grew up. We still have a ranch over there. So I grew up 56 miles from the nearest grocery store. At the end of 13 miles of gravel. And you weren't going to town unless you were going to church or the grocery store. Or if the tractor needed a part. It's a different way of growing up than a lot of you maybe grew up or the way our children grew up. Convenience wasn't a thing. You did things out of necessary. And you grew up tough. First time I plowed a field all by myself in a tractor, I was 8 years old. I'd never think about putting my 8-year-old on a tractor right now. But, you know, I think I was 110 pounds when I graduated high school. But the first year we bought an irrigated property down by Billings and we put up square hay bales. My dad put them up a little bit lighter because he was a smart man. More hay bales equals more money. But he built 50-pound bales. I weighed probably 80. We put 15,000 bales on the trailer that summer. Now, how does an 80-pound boy get a 50-pound bale on the trailer? Well, it was hard. But you know what? When I told my dad, it's hard, Dad. Do you know what Dad said to me? When the going gets tough, the tough get what? See, that was a saying back when we grew up, right? But maybe that's been lost a little bit in this society of convenience. That when the going gets tough get going. When things get hard, you get to work. And that's kind of where I want to go this morning. Is when it gets a little tough, do you go to work on yourself? Are you motivating yourself to be better tomorrow than you were today? Because going back to those 50-pound bales, it wasn't an option to not get them on the trailer. If any of you grew up a farm boy or had grandpas that had a farm, you didn't get to say, I can't do it. Those were fighting words. And I'm not joking. Like, you had to do it. So where does that decision that you cannot do it start? Because you see people do things all the time that they shouldn't be able to do. Right? And then you see the strong man fail. Where is that decision made? Yeah, it's made in the mind. Whether you can or you can't is all right here. Because one of those kids that ain't around no more that I grew up in high school, he had a dad that was smaller than me and skinnier than me. But that man could grab an engine to a Subaru and put it in the back of his truck. And me and Nathan had talks at times, and we didn't know where the strength came from. But you guys have met some of those guys before. They're just skin and bones and small. I had a grandpa like that. Where'd the strength come from? It was something internal. Whether you can or you can't, you're right. But the decision is made here. So this morning, what I want to talk about is one of the hardest things you're ever going to have to do in life. But if done correctly, it will be the most rewarding. What the hardest thing you have to do in this life and figure out to do correctly is to love. So I want to lay a foundation with you guys this morning, and you guys can turn over to Matthew chapter 22. Now let me ask you a question this morning. What's your greatest commission in life? I ask that way for a purpose, because some of your minds might have said seek and save the lost. And if you did, that's okay. But that's not your greatest commission. Now, that is a title that people have put on Seek and Save the Lost in the Bible. And don't get me wrong, it is a great commission. But we need to lay the foundation.
Right. Yep.
And then I'll explain what I'm saying. But in Matthew 22 here, verse 34, but when the Pharisee heard that he had put the Sadducees to silence, they gathered themselves together. And one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him. Teacher, what is the great commandment of the law? And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and the foremost commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depends the whole law and the prophets. So, we let the scripture define itself. Okay? And so man put a title on what they call the Great Commission. And sometimes the mind turns that to the greatest commission. Now we read here what Jesus' answer to that question was. He said, first you love. Now don't get me wrong. You want to seek and save the lost, but if you're loving correctly, that's going to be a trickle down, right?
Yeah.
Like I saw Tamino with a shirt on that had Montana roots. If we had a picture of Christian roots, that seek and save the lost would be down there in the roots with all the things that add up to Christianity. But you see, like we know in carpentry, that if we start just a centimeter off on this side of the shop, you're going to be way off on this side of the shop by the end. So your foundation has to be firm, and the foundation, the greatest commandment, is love. That's your starting point. And if you seek and save the lost from a point of love, the end result will be great. You will build true disciples. Done any other way, they might get in, they might make it, but you're not doing your part the correct way. It has to start by loving God first. But right, seek and save the lost comes into loving your neighbor. Let's also turn over to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Excuse me, 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And this is just to further the point of the subject I'm speaking on this morning. You got your subtitles. It says the excellence of love. I kind of like that. We want to be excellent in the way we love. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 1, it says, if I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not love, I have become a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. And if I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give my position, all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I deliver my body to be burned, and do not have love, it profits me nothing. You see, if I don't start from the right place, in a place of love. And I go out and I seek and save the lost. And I get 100 people to come in. Doing! 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 It's just noise to God. If I do that and forsake my family and I don't love them correctly, doing, 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 it's just noise. But how many times in life do we get started doing something and then forget? And can justify that maybe we're not there for our family because we're doing the Lord's work. Or maybe we're not that kind to this person. We didn't take the time when they were going through something hard because we were doing the Lord's work. We didn't maybe even do that from a bad place in our heart, right? We're trying to do the right thing. But we got off of the right start. So we have to start from the right place. So if you're ever asking your place, where is the right place to start, or asking yourself, it's love. The greatest thing you can ever accomplish for the Lord is not to give your money, not to go out and seek everybody. It's to love first. Love where you're at, and then take your step. And then if you find that you're off the mark, step back and find love again. Now don't let it take years, because then you're in danger of other things. Then step out in love again. You ever had to do that? You started a project and it didn't go the way you wanted it to? And you said, okay, this is not going right. Happens in math a lot too, right, Mr. Tool? And you got to start back at the beginning and say, okay, where did it go wrong? And rework the formula. That's what I'm talking about tonight. Excuse me, this morning, is reworking the formula, making sure our formula is correct in the way we approach things. You know, and I'll help paint a picture of what love looks like this morning, because the world has messed that up pretty bad. You know, I got teenage daughters approaching the teenage years, and they're kind of asking the question too, what is love? And they grew up with these fairy tale movies and stuff, and so you got to kind of paint the picture of what real love looks like. But you know, in your family, if your relationship between the husband and the wife is good, you've been painting that picture for a while. And that's where it starts. In our homes, through our actions, is how we teach. But Jesus liked to teach through stories. I think it's a good approach, and so I got one for you here this morning. I stole this from somebody else, so there's some names in here of people we don't know. But it still makes a great point. And this guy said, I took Helen, his 8-year-old daughter, and Brandon, his 5-year-old son, to the mall in Harrisburg to do a little shopping. We drove up and we spotted a Peterbilt 18-wheeler parked with a big sign on it that said, Petting Zoo. The kids jumped up and rushed at and asked, Daddy, Daddy, can we go? Please, can we go? I said, sure, flipping them a quarter before walking into Sears. They bolted away, and I felt free to take my time looking for a scroll saw. A petting zoo consists of a portable electric fence in a mall with about 6 inches of sawdust and 100 little furry baby animals of all kinds. The kids pay their money and stay in the enclosure with the squirmy little creatures where their dads and moms shop. A few minutes later, I turned around and I saw Helen walking along behind me. I was shocked to see that she preferred the hardware department over the petting zoo. Recognizing my error, I bent down and I asked her what was wrong. She looked up at me with those giant, limp brown eyes and sadly said, "Well, Daddy, it costs 50 cents." So I gave Brandon my quarter. And then she said the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. She repeated the family motto. The family motto is, "Love is an action." She had given Brandon her quarter, although no one loves cuddly furry creatures more than Helen. And she had watched both of us She had watched both me and my wife say love is an action for years around the house. She had heard love is an action, and now she had incorporated it into her lifestyle and it had become a part of her. So what do you think I did? Well, not what you might think. It took everything in me not to grab a quarter out of my pocket and give it to her. But I just let her finish my errand with me, letting her feel the weight of our family motto. And when I finished my errand, I took Helen to the petting zoo, and we stood by the fence and watched Brandon go crazy petting and feeding the animals. Helen stood with her hands on her chin, resting on the fence, and just watched Brandon. And I had 50 more cents burning a hole in my pocket, but I never offered it to her. And she never asked for it, because she knew the family model, love's not just an action. Love is a sacrificial action. Isn't that so true? I mean, what is our greatest picture of love? Isn't the sacrifice that was given on our behalf? Now, love is such a joyful thing when done right. And there is a benefit that occurs on our part that is greater than anything we can experience in this life. But sometimes it makes us forget that love does not happen without the giving of something. The one loving must give up something to love correctly. Love always has a price. And sometimes that price is extremely high. But love will always, always, always pay the price. If it's not willing to pay the price, then it is not love. I think right now would be the proper time to insert to all the younger people in the room that aren't married yet that love is willing to wait. And if it ain't willing to wait, then it's not love. Because love does not take something from somebody. Love gives to somebody. And that's the ugly picture of the other side of the coin that we see in relationships when they're not loving. Those people that are not loving, they take, don't they? They take from the other person. Right? You think of an abusive relationship is a strong example of that. There's a lot more littler ones. That ain't love. But you see, love is not for me. If I am loving you, love is not for me. Love is for you. Because love is not selfish. Love does not grab and take. Love gives. So this morning I want us, as we go through this, to ask the question. We've laid a foundation that love is the most important. Love is our starting point. And then we said love has a price. The question I want us to ask ourselves this morning, are we willing to pay the price? Right? When we're working with people, don't we ask them to set down and count the cost? If we miss that step in evangelizing with people, sometimes that's a crucial spot. And they're just those people that grab it up and then soon are gone. Because they didn't sit down and count the cost. When we're evaluating ourselves, are we willing to draw it out? And say, are my actions today ending in the salvation of my family? What do I have to give up in my life? Because love gives. What do I have to give up in my life to assure the eternity of my children? You think of those 23 kids that I went to school with, that any of them, if you asked their parents when they were going to school with me, wanted their children not to make it? You know what the formula was in most of those parents that made their children not make it, though? The parents wanted it for their children. They didn't want it for themselves. So what happened? The children didn't, or the parents did not model it correctly for their children. And kids can see, if you're not invested, kids can see right through that. If you're not serious, I mean, how do kids become such good manipulators? They know when you're serious and when you're not, right? They know. They can read you better than anyone. Never play poker with your kids. But if we're gonna be willing to pay the price, you guys can turn over to 1 John chapter 4. If we're going to be willing to pay the price, how are we going to figure that out? It's going to take something that a lot of we don't like to do. Self-evaluation. How many of you like to tell yourself that you're wrong? Right? How often are we wrong? Well, a lot of us don't even stop to think about it a lot. Because we don't want to admit it. But growth is not going to happen in a person unless they're willing to admit their mistakes. If you're in sports, you're not going to get better if you're not willing to say, okay, I'm weak in this spot and I need help. And then you go to that coach and you get the coaching to get better in that spot. Or maybe you're weak in a muscle and so you have to hit the gym to build that muscle so you're better on that side. Right? There's that saying, this is my weak side. Well, do we self-evaluate? That's more important than the physical. Do we self-evaluate the spiritual and ask ourselves, what's our weak side? Where are we falling short? What can I do better? How can I be better tomorrow than I was today? Not every night, but a few times a week when I lay down at night, I'm evaluating my actions, saying, Lord, before the Lord, this is a conversation between me and the Lord. How did I do today? Where did I fall short? Sometimes it's prevalent, and I know, because I want to be patient and kind, and I knew I wasn't in some situations that day. And so I say, you know, it hurts, right? That's why we don't self-evaluate, because it hurts when we mess up, and we don't want to mess up. But without admitting it, there is no growth. So do we say, okay, this is where I messed up? And then do we evaluate in our mind a plan of how we're going to do that better? You know, so for me, at sometimes, something I've had in my mind for a long time is you got kids that throw fits, right? If you have kids, they're just going to throw fits, at least when they're little. And hopefully you work them out of that by the time they're older. But, you know, I've had this saying that adults are really just big kids. You know, and a lot of times we see adults throwing fits, it just looks different. But what we see a lot in easy scenario is the kids throwing a fit, right? And what's the parent's way to fix that? Hey, you stop it right now. If you don't stop it, you're not getting your cookie today. But the kid's on the ground yelling. And what's the adult doing back? We're yelling back at him. So what are we teaching the child? Well, you just, like, they're throwing their fit because their little world just uncrumbled, right? Well, now that's inconveniencing you, their fit, right? And so you're yelling because you're inconvenienced. You're yelling at their behavior because it's not going the way you wanted it to. Well, why are they on the floor? Because things aren't going the way they wanted it to. You see the problem here? So I've had to really go to work on myself to set a better example of not throwing the fit myself. And so sometimes, I picked this up from a self-help guy, but sometimes what I got to do in the moment now is sit down. You ever try to yell at somebody sitting down? The effect is not quite as good. And you don't feel like yelling as much when you're sitting down. But why don't we take that time sometimes? Because it's inconvenient. We're headed out the door. We got places to go. But what's more important? Where we're headed or the soul in front of us? Why can't we take time to talk to our wives? Because the work's got to be done. Our work day, we got to get the camper ready. Why, when they're trying to give us some feelings, open up to us as men, we can't slow down and hear them? You know, we want to fix things. You know, Noah built an ark, and a lot of us feel like we're fixers, you know. And so they want to talk to us, and we try to fix it. If you guys haven't heard before, something that helped me out a lot in my marriage is that they don't want us to fix it a lot of the time. They just want us to listen. So my wife does a good job. She just says, babe, you don't have to fix this one. And then I know that I just need to listen. And then I can ask her, do you want a solution? You know, I can do better on that. I usually still try to fix it at the end, but I listen first. So a little bit better, maybe. I think you guys are in 1 John chapter 4. I'm going to flip over there. First John chapter 4. Picking it up in verse 19. We love because he first loved us. If someone says, I love God, and he hates his brother, is he a liar? For the one who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, who he has not seen. And this commandment we have from him, that the one who loves God should love his brother also. So I'm going to ask you guys this morning, how are your close relationships? How are your friendships? How are your marriages? Because it's important. It's said elsewhere in Scripture that this is how we show that Christ died for us. His love for us is how we love others. It's our picture to the world. The love that we have for each other is our ministry, could you say, to the world. Because if we go out and evangelize and we don't start from that place of love, like, who wants this in a group of people that hate each other? And I know we don't. But if you're out there evangelizing and people come in your home and you're not getting around along with their wife, why do they think that if you're not getting along with your wife and your family is not doing well, then why do they want this? What's this going to fix? They're looking for a fix, right? The world's looking to fix something. Why is addiction such a thing? Because the people are trying to fill something. And what is that they're trying to fill? Addiction mainly happens because people don't feel loved. And that's what they turn to. And if they can't find love in what you're preaching, in motion, then why do they want anything to do with it? You see how your life becomes your evangelizing? And then I would say, you can fight me on it later and we can go rounds if you want. And you can maybe change my mind. And I would say there are a few situations where you could have a good relationship with God. But on the majority, if your relationship with your wife is on the rocks, wives, if your relationship with your husbands is on the rocks, it's going to hurt your relationship with God. You're not going to have as strong or as good of a relationship with God as you could have if you don't fix that. Now, I said at the beginning that what I was going to talk about this morning is one of the hardest things you're ever going to have to do. Because love comes with a good feeling when done correctly. But there are times where it's hard to love. Now, God has blessed me immensely. And my wife has never been hard to love. And we have a great relationship. And I'm going to give 80% of that for her. Before I got together with my wife in relationships, if you wanted to fight, it was on. I was a fighter, and I didn't back down. Mainly because that's what I saw growing up. And that's the importance of why we have to get our relationships right. Because we don't want our children to have bad friendships. We don't want them to have bad marriages. We don't want them to have bad relationships. The majority of us are a product of our parents. And we spent a long time putting to rest the bad qualities that were taught to us this side of Christ. But when me and Emily got together, it was founded on Christ. And the relationship was done right. I did not kiss my wife. This is for the younger people. I did not kiss my wife until the day I proposed to her. And I had known her close to a year. Was that hard? Because I had lived in the world before? Yes. But hard, when in this society did hard become a four-letter word? Now, for some of your intellect brains, you're like, well, hard is a four-letter. You get what I'm saying, though. It became a bad word. Why did hard become an automatic bad word? Because anything worth doing in this life is going to be hard at some point. But hard equals good. Hard can equal bad. You decide. But hard equals good. You guys can turn over to John 13. So, yeah, I said love was going to be the hardest thing you'd have to do at times. And so that is the four-letter word for some people that they don't want to get to work on themselves. Because if there's something on the rocks, 95% of the time, it's not all the other person's fault. There's something going on there where it's not working out. And that leads me back to when me and Emily got together. We made a pact. I told her, feelings are real. Okay? Feelings are real. Sometimes they're right. Sometimes they're not. I told you how I grew up. You guys have probably all witnessed it in some way or another, but have you seen a fight, a squabble between a husband and a wife or a couple? The way I explain this to people and what I like to tell people that are getting newly married is what you witness when you see that is a vomiting, a throwing up of emotions. And that is happening because people have let those emotions go inside and they just pack them down. And they don't let them out until all of a sudden they just come, out in a nasty mess. So in relationships, what we did from the start, and I will tell you that we are married 11 years this year. 12? Okay. So we're having our 12th anniversary. And that's why I looked for clarification. And we've had disagreements, but we have never had a full out argument in 12 years. Growing up, that would seem like an impossibility. But in Christ, it's possible. The main ingredient for that is what I'm about to give to you. That feelings are feelings, and they need to be talked about. But they need to be talked about when they rise one at a time. They don't need to be vomited out all over each other. So if you can talk to it one at a time, so I'm just going to share like maybe what that looks like. In our relationship, there was one time Emily came home and she said, "Babe, the worker at the grocery store was flirting with me, I think." I said, "I don't blame him." She's like, "And maybe it kind of felt good." I'm like, "I get that. It feels good to be noticed. So get over here. I notice you." You see, that's how that feeling can go. But if people, there's a lot of times that conversation can go a lot worse because there's feelings that haven't been talked about before then. And there's things that you're wondering about and you're just not working through. And then that comes down the pipe and you're like, you see, you should be able to have an open relationship where you can talk about those things, let them out, because they're feelings, they're there. So other times in our relationship, it's like, okay, when you do that, it makes me feel like this. Oh, wait, that's not my intention at all, babe. Like, this is where I was at. You see, that's how feelings should be worked through. If you can work through that with people, with your wife especially, with your children, I've implemented that with my children and figure out sometimes I'm reading them all wrong. I think they're coming at me a certain way. They're not. Maybe they're just curious and they're asking a question and I think that they're second guessing my judgment. They're not. They're just curious. But I can get on them because I think they're second guessing my judgment. But that's where the patience comes in. Like, hold on, wait a minute. Let's find out where we're at. And then let's react. Because see that reacting up front, I am finding most of the time when I react too quick up front, it's from a point of selfishness because I don't like the way things are going and I want to redirect it. But I'm not acting from a place of love. I'm acting from a place of authority. Now, men, I'll speak to you because it starts with you. You are the leaders in your home. And you do have authority given to you by God. And you do have the final say. But how do you use that? Is it a place to just put down the hammer, direct it, and make them go where you want to go? Because I'll tell you what, I've seen kids fall in line, think that they're doing really well in life. They hit 18, and they go far left. What went wrong there? Mom and dad always demanded a certain something. Kid always fell in line, but you never had their heart. If you're always using your authority to direct your kids, you're not going to get to their heart all the time. How long did the law work for the children of God? And so I'm saying there's a time for the rod, right? But there is a time to direct your children in love. And it's not always, stop that! Sometimes it's getting down on their level, looking them in the eyes and say, I understand that dropping your cookie on the floor just unraveled your world. But we don't handle that problem by screaming and yelling. But you see the tone of voice there? I'm teaching them the right tone to have. But if I'm yelling at them, I'm teaching them something else, and I'm just putting them under a point of law. Kids are not under law. We are children of God. We're not under law anymore. We're under grace. Now, can the kids keep on sinning that grace, well, not sinning, can the kids keep on misbehaving that grace may increase? May it never be. Right? So there is a time and a place for the rod of correction. But it shouldn't be your first defense. Anybody know how much time I got left? I got a lot of notes. So, John 13, verses 34, it says, "A new commandment I give you, that you love one another even as I loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." And we talked the importance of like seeking and saving the lost. But I'm just making a point here. I'm not trying to belittle that at all. I'm just saying this for a point. But it doesn't say you will know that they are my disciples by how they seek and save the lost. It says you will know that they are my disciples for their love for one another. You see, this is the first and foremost picture that we have to the world around us. But what is love? And I want to read this just because it hits home. It's a fun story. Because we ask that question, what is love? And a group of professors posed that question to some 4 and 8-year-olds. What does love mean? And the answers they got were broader, deeper, and more profound than anyone can ever imagine. When my grandmother got arthritis, she couldn't bend over and paint her toenails anymore. So my grandfather does it for her all the time, even when his hands got arthritis too. That's love. Rebecca, age 8. When someone loves you, the way they say your name is different. You just know that your name is safe in their mouth. Billy, age 4. Love is when a girl puts on perfume and a boy puts on shaving cologne and they go out and they smell each other. Carl, age 5. Love is when you go out to eat and give somebody most of your French fries without making them give you any of theirs. Chrissy, age 6. Love is what makes you smile when you're tired. Terry, age 4. Love is when mommy makes coffee for daddy and she takes a sip before giving it to him to make sure it tastes okay. Danny, age 8. Love is what's in the room with you at Christmas if you stop opening presents and just listen. Bobby, age 7. If you want to learn to love better, you should start with a friend that you hate. Nikki, age 6. Love is when you tell a guy you like his shirt and then he wears it every day. Noel, age 7. Love is like an old woman and a little old man who are still friends even after they know each other so well. Tommy, age 6. During a piano recital, I was on stage and I was scared. I looked at all the people watching me and I saw my daddy waving and smiling. He was the only one doing that. And I wasn't scared anymore. Cindy, age 8. My mommy loves me more than anybody. You don't see anybody else kissing to me to sleep at night. Claire, age 6. Love is when mommy gives daddy the best piece of chicken. Elaine, age 5. I got a few more, but I want to stop on that one. You want to start loving your spouse correctly? When you're dishing up your food, pick out the plate you want the most. And then give it to your spouse. Seems like a small thing, but you practice that, and you'll find yourself giving up more and more for the ones you love. I've started that with my wife. We found out recently she's been doing it for me for a while. That's why the food tastes better, I guess. I guess my kids are going to find out today, but I started doing it for my kids. Picking out the one that I like the best and then giving it to them. Some of the time. They don't always need the biggest piece, okay? Love is when mommy sees daddy smelly and sweaty and still says that he's handsomer than Robert Redford. Chris, age 7. Love is when your puppy licks your face even after you left him alone all day. Mary, age 8. I know my sister loves me because she gives me all of her clothes and then she has to go, all of her old clothes, and then she has to go out and buy new ones. Lauren, age 4. When you love somebody, your eyelashes go up and down and little stars come out of you. Karen, age 7. Love is when mommy sees daddy on the toilet and she doesn't think it's gross. Mark, age 6. You really shouldn't say, I love you, unless you mean it. But if you mean it, you should say it a lot. Because people forget. Jessica, age 8. I'm an emotional guy sometimes, okay? And if this is something for you younger guys growing up in this macho world, that real men cry. Because tears of emotion are real. And the men that can't show it, it's because something's wrong inside of them. So I might get teary on this last one. You've seen it already this morning. But there was a guy that broke into our property once that we were staying at, because we have rentals, when Graceland was about a year and a half. And I chased that man out of the house. Well, I knocked him out of the window when I jumped into it. And then I chased him down in my car. So all I'm saying is, you can be emotional and real and be, and cry. I'll be the first to cry at a movie. My wife will admit that. And you can be a man. Because I will be the first to cry at a movie because I feel people's emotions. But if somebody ever comes at my family again and I gave you a story, there's no doubt that I'm putting them down. But I'm not aggressive in nature. So you can be tough and tender. One of my favorite country songs right now, you guys should go check it out, is A Cowboy's Always Humble. And the final one, the winner was a 4-year-old child whose next-door neighbor was an elderly gentleman. who had recently lost his wife. And upon seeing the man cry, the little boy went to the gentleman's yard, climbed on his lap, and just sat there. And when the mother asked what they had talked about, the little boy said nothing. I just helped him cry. Are we there for people when they need us? Will we take the time to help them cry? Have we ever done that with our children? You know, they're not getting treated right at school, and they're throwing a fit about it a little bit, maybe it feels like. Is that a real emotion, though? When people aren't treating you right? Have we ever sat down with them and helped them cry? If you're a man, no, because you got to fix it, right? You see the importance? Do you see the importance of starting at the right place? But love gives something, right? And a lot of times, what we need to give is whatever's happening next. We need to be there in the moment with people. So I challenge you, when that event with your child is not going right, take a seat. Because the seat's going to get you off your feet and you're not going to think you have to move. And then look in their eyes and see their feelings. And realizing what's going on with your child, your friend, your wife. Because love will give its time if it's real love. And that's how you're going to make a difference in this world. If you love correctly, everything else that comes after that will be of the truth.